We've been talking with Dr. John McCormick, and our next guest today is Leslie Head. Leslie is an attorney, and she is a budding new young author who has written Trafficking in Organs. And I want to welcome you, Leslie.
Thank you very much for having me, Gail.
My pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your background, who you are, and how it was that you threw as an attorney caution to the wind and became a writer of fiction.
Well, as you and I were discussing earlier, I think that a great many authors, attorneys, are good writers because you have to be a good writer to survive in law school, and the counselors kind of funnel you in that direction. And the other ingredient is that most attorneys are miserable, and so they're always looking for something else to get them through the night. And I think that people harbor the ambition to go and write, and also they all think they're John Grisham and that they can make a zillion bucks and resign from the law practice.
Was it difficult moving from the corporate world to a creative lifestyle?
Yeah, it was really tough. I am a very social person, and I miss the coffee machine and talking with people. Writing is a very solitary life, and when I was trying to explain what I was doing to other people, especially other attorneys, I really had a tough time, and I really stopped telling them. I would say, "Oh, I'm writing," and they would there would be silence, and they just didn't understand that I was now pursuing this quiet little. Actually, I write short stories, so it's a very different kind of pursuit, and I had a tough time describing it to the attorneys, but. You know, I changed my definition of success, and I became a very internally motivated person. And now my objectives are very different, and I just want to improve my writing and keep going.
Well, how did you go about learning to write fiction?
Well, I got into classes, of course.
Because you're methodical and analytical, because you were an attorney, right?
Well, we're very fortunate in Atlanta. We have a lot of wonderful classes here, Callenwald. Kennesaw, Georgia Perimeter College, which is a two-year college, has a very good creative writing program. But the thing about it now is that you can get excellent writing classes online now. And I've used three of them, in fact, and just learned a tremendous amount. And the thing about writing is it lends itself to online learning. I can write something here in Atlanta, I can cut and paste, and I can send it to a teacher in Oregon, which I've done. So, you know, it's a very wonderful means, and there are three groups, particularly Writers Online Workshop, which is a division of Writer's Digest, and then the Gotham Writers Workshop, which is out of New York, and then a third is Zoetrope, which is something that Francis Ford Coppola started. And I've used all three of them. Writers Online Workshop is the more elemental one, and if someone is interested in just getting their feet wet, that's a great place to go.
Well, tell us about Trafficking in Organs. I read it. It was very descriptive. I know it's been submitted to Reader's Digest, the Reader's Digest
Writer's
contest.
Digest. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so tell us a little bit about Trafficking in Organs and your submission for the Reader's Digest contest.
Yeah, well, I really sometimes don't like to take myself too seriously, and I like humor a lot. And so I came up with a story that was based around children's pageants because I went to the airport one day around a hotel at the airport, and I saw one. I visited a pageant. I kind of snuck in, and I was just horrified because it was a glitz pageant, which is one of those that have the kids with extensions and hair pieces and spray-on tans.
Mm.
And I was just, I wanted to write about it, and I wanted to be very sarcastic, which I am about most everything. And so I started coming up with this a framework, and basically it's about a kidney transplant and a children's pageant, if you can kind of mesh those two together.
Well, I read it and I loved it.
Yeah, it's what if you were a mild-mannered person and you had a relative who you couldn't stand, and they gave you a kidney and you were kind of beholden to them and had to do favors for them, like take them to a pageant. So that's kind of what happens.
And I love the conversation that goes along with it. And I'm not going to tell the ending, but I just thought the way you let it twist and turn was very interesting, almost, I guess, like a case will twist and turn, because I know that you did have some wonderful experience in practicing law, and you work with the former Atlanta mayor, servant, and you served as a counsel to Value Jet Airlines general counsel to AirTran Airways. But today, we're talking about your career as a fiction writer. Would you ever consider writing legal fiction, because you've had such great legal experiences?
Well, you know, actually, I got out of the whole mess with the intention of doing that, like everybody else. And what I discovered was that you can't always force yourself to write well in a certain area. I found that the stuff that I do best and that I'm happiest with are these crazy little short stories about disturbed people and families. And, you know, who knows, I may write something later. I've learned a great deal about legal thrillers, and I've been to several seminars about it, and it may happen. I'm becoming, real comfortable with my writing and happy with it. And but right now, just doing the short stories is just a wonderful joy.
And I read in some of your writings that you said that most writers begin as readers. I think that's probably very true.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had authors that influenced you, or you have any favorite authors that have inspired you in some way?
Well, I think the pivotal author for me was Eudora Welty. When I was about 10 years old, my mother gave me a copy of a story called Why I Live at the P.O., by Eudora Welty, and it was about this crazy Southern family. And because I had a crazy Southern family, I really related to it.
You're a native Atlantean,
right,
are you not?
That's correct, that's correct. And so I just, I was struck by this piece of literature that she could so actually, I thought she had met my grandmother or something, but I wanted to do that. And I can remember that even now as an adult, being 10 years old and being just kind of swept up in that. So Eudora Welty, Flannery O'Connor, all of the short story writers that are catching the southern mood and thoughts.
Well, that would make sense. Even though that there are a lot of Southern writers, you've chosen to concentrate on Southern stories, and you've got lots of Southern relatives.
Right. Well, I think it's all kind of necessary. The South is not at all like it was, and many aspects are not worthy of retaining, but some of the phrases, the language, some of the expressions, I want to get that down on paper. I think it's important.
Would it catch you off guard? And if it would, you can tell me. If I asked you what some of those Southern expressions and idioms are that you had in mind.
I'm going to pop the tar out of you. These crazy expressions that you hear growing up and don't question until later when you think, what in the world does that mean?
Pop the tar out of
you,
yeah.
Right, or you say it to someone from Ohio and they look at you with a... And so they're just these wonderful things that are fading away, and I just want to write them down and... preserve them.
Yeah, we do have some. I'm from the South as well, but in the state of Georgia, from Columbus, and I do love all those idiomatic expressions myself.
Right.
We always tote our groceries,
right?
And we go to the market.
My grandfather was perpetually over yonder, and would never define it. But there's these expressions,
Every region, I guess, has their thing, but I do believe with all my heart that there truly is a Southern culture.
Oh, yeah. And, the Southern writers really made the short story what it is. And Eudora Welty, Flannery O'Connor, Carson McCullers, those people are just responsible for the short story being the medium that it is.
Well, what were some of your biggest misconceptions about working as a writer?
I think the first one was I did not realize the amount of revision that was necessary in writing. I kind of had this ideal that the words would just flow from this possession of in heaven or whatever, and they would just come down and they'd be perfect and they wouldn't need any working or tweaking. And that's not at all true. The 90% of the work that you do as a writer is revising what you came up with initially. And it's a very tedious thing, and you have to learn to write when you are not in the mood. You have to write every day. You can't be wait to be struck with some spark to write. It's a tedious kind of thing, and that was a huge misconception. I didn't appreciate that.
Well, tell us about your daily writing routine. Do you have a number of set hours that you write, or do you write at a certain time of day?
Well, I sometimes I'm up really at odd hours, and I will write at night. I will write in the afternoon. I do try, though, to write every day. One of the things that I learned is that you kind of get into this mindset, and some people refer to it as the practice of writing. And it's kind of a flow, a creative state, and in order to get there, you have to keep practicing. And in fact, Ray Bradbury, who's written a great book about Zen and the art of writing, mentioned the story about the pianist who said, if I don't practice every day, I know it, my audience will know it. You know, it starts to kind of snowball. And he said, and I have it here, the quote, if you do not write every day, the poisons will accumulate and you will begin to die or act crazy or both. You must stay drunk on writing so reality cannot destroy you. And it just becomes something that if you can do a little bit every day and get into that state and become, let your subconscious mind kind of take over and do some of the work for you. It's a wonderful feeling.
Well, you know, Leslie, I wish that our listeners could actually see you but they can hear the passion in your voice. I know they hear the passion in your voice, but if they could see you, they could see how animated your face is and your body language and how much you really love what you're doing now.
Yeah, reviewing a contract just doesn't kind of hold a...
Didn't get it for you,
no.
Did it? Didn't get it for you, but
no,
but this
no.
Obviously does. It's,
yeah.
it's very real if you look at you and you see that.
Thanks. I've always been lucky because I get a lot of ideas, and I think I'm one of these creative types and writing types where I'm always having character ideas and plot ideas, and sometimes when I was working as an attorney, they would intrude upon my work, and really, that's a wonderful thing to have because I'm always coming up with new ideas.
Well, speaking of those new ideas, are you working on anything now? Do you have certain objectives and thoughts about what's next for you?
Yeah, I have several stories that I'm revising, and I would like to have enough to maybe have a short story collection. I'm sending stuff out all the time for publication. I'm trying to get my stuff out there, and I have a lot of confidence in what I'm doing, and I know that I will be hitting my stride a little bit more. But yeah, I think I'm also going to maybe think about some nonfiction articles. I'm just going to try and enjoy what I've learned and what I've accumulated and run with it.
Well, when you say that you're thinking about some nonfiction articles, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, just there are some areas that I'm interested in. Just my mom had been real sick from, she was very depressed and had a lot of trouble with that, and I'm intrigued by writing about depression in the elderly. There's a lot of information out there now about that, and we have a lot of people here in Atlanta who are researching it, and I would really like to write an article about that. I think it'd be great.
So see, that research from your legal profession is creeping back in there. That's a very natural path for you.
Well, when you work as an attorney, you learn to work very hard, and so now I know what I have to do. I just keep my head down and get the work done, and keep going. And I think researching is something that comes pretty easy to me as well.
Well, I hear where you get your ideas from one of your stories, two of your stories. One was that you had this experience where you saw the workings of a beauty pageant.
Yeah, yeah.
And that triggered your trafficking in organs.
Right.
And your research now for something that's nonfiction was a personal experience
right,
for
right.
that. Are there other...
Yeah, I think because I grew up here in Atlanta during the 60s and 70s, as a kid, I saw a lot of the racial issues going on, and I need to get that down on paper too. It's part of the South, the bad part of the South that's going away, but I need to get it down and write about it because it was so important. And I did see it as a kid, and on a personal level, and the intangible things that went on, and I need to write about that, and I will be doing some more of that, I think.
I'm so delighted to hear that. I did a lot of diversity training in my lifetime,
uh-huh.
And it was because I grew up in the segregated South.
Absolutely.
As well. And those stories need to continue to live on, because that's how we learn, is from our past.
Absolutely. And that's I think that gives me a lot to work for, and it gives meaning to what I'm doing. So that's very important to me.
You know, and I tell my children, they don't even relate, thank goodness, but about the times when I was growing up, and even when I went to the doctors, there was, in those days, the word colored,
right.
Colored waiting rooms, white
right.
waiting rooms, colored water fountains, white water fountains. It was pervasive. There was nowhere that we weren't totally segregated.
And it was more than that. It was just the expressions, the quiet things that went on, the way that people looked at each other. And
yes.
You know, that's something you can only capture through fiction. So that's what's wonderful about what I'm able to do now.
I think it's wonderful, Leslie. Would you maybe share the opening paragraph of Trafficking with Organs? I love the way that you wrote that, and I actually blocked it off for you right here.
Okay.
So I don't want to read your work. If you just
right.
read a piece of it that you like in there, I like it so much.
Do we have time for all of them, or should I just do...
Pick a piece that you want. I think we have about 5 minutes left.
Okay, what we have here is a guy who was a middle management kind of person who's been very ill, had kidney problems, and had to go on medication. He was on dialysis, and he has a very proper life now. He doesn't want to go out much. He's afraid of germs, and he's settling down for the day. It's Memorial Day weekend, and he's going to watch the sands of Iwo Jima. And he's sitting on his bed, putting on his tube socks and his sneakers, and he's tying the left one and then the right one, and the phone rings, and it's his sister, his half-sister, Bambi. And she screamed across the line, "Ray, you got to come over right now. My car blew up." She didn't say please or if you have the time, but get over here now. Ever since Bambi gave him her kidney, there was no end to the favors. And she didn't have the usual kinds of problems. They were always dramatic, like, "I shot myself in the foot," or "I got held up at the mini-mart." Plus, Ray was mortified just being around her because of the whole scandal when his dad dropped dead, leaving not one, but two surviving families, 16-year-old Ray and his mama Evelyn, and 2-year-old Bambi and her mama Nadine. The whole town was still talking about it.
And it's really a fun read and a learning read, because you begin to sympathize with these young kids, you know, in the beauty pageant. We're going to wrap up, but before we do,
mm-hmm.
I want you to tell our readers, Leslie, about your website, where they can learn more about you.
Well, I really, I'm more at the email stage right now.
Well, give us your email then, Leslie.
It's under my husband's name. It's david.head@comcast.net. And he's also very interesting, so you can contact him too.
Well, Leslie, you're a very interesting person. We've been talking books today. My guest has been Leslie Head, who is the author of Trafficking in Organs. She's a former attorney, a writer of humorous short stories with a Southern flavor. We're happy to have had you here today, Leslie. Thank you for being with us, and thank all of you for listening. This is Gail Cohn, wishing you a good read.